This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us today on a beautiful Sunday morning on the wake-up call. I think a very entertaining and certainly educational show with our guests, Kenrick Ward from the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. Good morning, Kenrick.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you for taking the drive. Exactly where did you drive from? I know you had to drive down.
Here's a little geographic trivia question for your listeners. It's Locust Grove.
Oh, I know where Locust Grove is. It's north of Orange before you get to, is it Route 3?
Right, the infamous Route 3.
Yeah, it's no longer really a route. It's more like a highway. Or at least it should be based on the traffic pattern.
Yeah, one of my welcomes to Virginia was getting rear-ended on Route 3.
Well, welcome to Virginia. Hopefully your time within the state has gone a little better.
Definitely. It's much calmer down here.
Well, it is Sunday morning here in Virginia, at least in the Charlottesville area, and there's no the basketball game tonight isn't until 8, so it's kind of smooth here around WNRN at this time of day, mostly because everyone's kicked back and listening to Wake Up Call here on WNRN. So Kenrick Ward is the bureau chief, correct, at Watchdog.org?
That's correct.
And you know, let's talk for a minute about Watchdog. And when I hear that name, and whether this is strictly for this particular organization or whether it applies to other organizations throughout the country, Watchdog.org makes me think of an unbiased political group, or at least an unbiased group that is watching for good and bad behavior in the political regime.
Yeah, I would say that's a good definition. And it does tend to scare some politicians and bureaucrats when we call them to report on our stories, because it carries that feeling about it. It's part of the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity, which is based in Alexandria, Virginia. And we are one of 40 bureaus around the country. We have state bureaus from coast to coast, and I head up the bureau here in Virginia. We have a staff of 3 people, and we're going to be spending a lot of time down in Richmond the next couple of months covering legislative issues.
Now, doing my homework, watchdog.org, and we'll talk for a minute or two about the mission, et cetera, because some people say, I don't know if they're really unbiased or not based on some of the things I read, but it's not in all 50 states. In fact, I think I counted 24, so really not even in half of
actually,
the states.
We have either bureaus or affiliates in 40 states. So we're growing, which is unusual in the news business these days. Most news organizations on the mainstream side are atrophying and shedding staff. I personally have been laid off a couple of times. This is an online news gathering system, and it's a nationwide system. If we don't have a bureau in a particular state, sometimes we'll parachute folks in. But my responsibility is Virginia, and our mission is basically to cover the things that the mainstream media is not covering, and that is specifically ferreting out waste, fraud, and abuse in the public sector and trying to promote accountability and transparency in government.
Again, our guest today, Kenrick Ward from the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. This is listener-supported independent music radio station WNRN. Write down the phone number. You're welcome to call us a little later in the program, 979-0919. If you're a little further out, it's 877-967-6762. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Kenrick, let's be specific for a moment about the mission of Watchdog.org, because as I said a moment ago, many people believe are so biased themselves that they can't believe that anyone is truly unbiased, especially in the media. Someone pays your bills.
Well, that is true. And most media rely on advertising to pay the lion's share of their bills. We rely on donors, much as your station does, Rick. And we have people from around the country who believe in our mission and who want what we consider to be the foremost cause of journalism, which is to keep an eye on the public sector, to track where tax dollars are being spent or being misspent, and to do the kinds of hard-hitting journalism that a lot of newspapers and TV stations aren't doing anymore because of layoffs or other political considerations. You know, you bring up a good point, Rick, about objectivity. And American journalism, as it's currently being practiced, is really set up as a series of little monopolies. Your newspaper here in Charlottesville, for instance, is also owned by the paper in Richmond, the paper up in Culpeper. It's owned ultimately by Warren Buffett. And so everybody has an angle. Everybody has a point of view. And it's a bit specious for journalists or anybody else to say that they are, quote, truly objective. I don't necessarily buy that, because we're all human beings. We all have our own points of view, and that goes up and down the corporate ladder, wherever it happens to be. What I like about our organization is that we are charged with going out and basically with neither fear nor favor tracking down stories without trying to take a political side. If for instance, a Republican was sponsoring legislation, or worse yet, pushing an agenda behind the scenes that was lining his or her own pockets, or doing favors for a corporate friend or a campaign donor, we would go after that person as hard as we would if they were a Democrat. So it's not, in our view, a partisan issue. It's not the duopoly of Republican versus Democrat. It's not like, you know, RD, good, bad. It's basically following the story wherever it goes and trying to be honest about it and reporting it. The European press, by contrast, as your listeners may know, tends to be a little more honest and forthright about their political perspectives. In London, for instance, if you're a liberal, you'll want to read The Guardian. If you're a conservative, you'll probably want to read one of the tabloids or the Telegraph. If you're mainstream or middle of the road, you want to read the Daily Mail.
But hang on a second. If you are donations are what allows watchdog.org to function. Unlike a radio station where, regardless of your political views, you can donate to WNRN. By the way, I think if you go to WNRN.org right now, there's an online site where you can put in your pledge, your donation today. But if, wouldn't Watchdog.org write more articles that bring in more money? If you are strictly writing articles that tend to favor the GOP, you're going to get more donations. And it works the other way as well. If you write articles that tend to go after the GOP, then you might get more donations from the other side of the aisle. How does Watchdog.org not tend to lean towards the style of article that actually brings in greater donations during that time period, whenever that may be, since you're dependent on that type of money making to pay your bills?
What our people do on the other side of the wall, and we do have, like most news organizations, a separation of church and state, as you will. You have the news side, which we consider the church, and then you have the business side, which goes out and recruits donors and gathers up the money that allows us to do what we do. What we don't do is simplify it and reduce it down to just Republican versus Democrat. For instance, we had a story this past week that identified Republicans who voted for the FISA Act, which was the five-year renewal of the controversial security and anti-terrorism legislation that basically allows for warrantless wiretapping and other civil rights concerns that essentially Democrats and Republicans united behind in a strong majority to approve. We criticized that move, as we have other moves by both sides of the aisle. And where we're really coming from, Rick, is the issue of free markets and liberty-oriented initiatives, whereby we don't believe in a statist system where government is considered to be the end-all, be-all. We look at trying to free up opportunities that give people choice, give them liberty, and the kinds of things that Thomas Jefferson spoke about.
11:12 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest, Kenrick Ward from the Virginia Bureau. He's the chief there of Watchdog.org. We've been talking about sort of how Watchdog works and the mission and how it is a non-biased form of media. Let's talk for a minute about the article that originally grabbed my attention to email you and ask you to be a guest. And I forget the overall headline, but it talked about how Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli and an environmental group, Chesapeake Climate Action Network, were both on the same side of being against a specific law which allowed for... Kenrick, you take it from here.
I'd be happy to. This is, I thought, a great issue that shows how left and right, so-called, can come together in agreement on something that really amounted to crony capitalism, which, just to give a frame of reference, I believe is an oxymoron, because capitalism in the true sense would not be a cronyist kind of system. But what Virginia has on the books now and has had on the books for 5 years is a law that allows utilities to receive bonuses and credits for using renewable energy. Now, that's an admirable goal. It's the kind of policy that's in place in several states. The problem with the Virginia version of this law is that the two biggest utilities in the state, Dominion Power and Appalachian Power, are receiving more than $1 billion in bonuses and credits for using, tapping into power sources such as hydroelectric dams that have been around for 80 years. So there's no new construction going on. And all these solar, wind, and hydro projects are all out of state. So there are no Virginia jobs resulting from this. And so the critique of this program comes from both sides. On the left, so-called, the Chesapeake Climate Action Network was bemoaning the fact that the law has this gigantic loophole that allows these utilities to reap large multi-million dollar profits and credits and bonuses, or so-called adders, without creating a single job in the state of Virginia. And Mr. Cuccinelli is looking at it from the taxpayer perspective of, well, what's the point here? Is this a market-based system? Does this level the playing field? Is it helping the ratepayers? And he concluded that the answer is no, as the law is currently constituted.
Again, our guest today, Kenrick Ward from the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. We're going to be going through some of the articles, the topics that have been written in the last 4 or 5 months, I guess, if you go back. This particular one about how Ken Cuccinelli and Chesapeake Bay environmentalist groups seem to come together on one specific issue, which I thought, wow, how is that possible? Again, 11:15 here on the Wake Up Call.
And support for independent music radio, WNRN, comes from Brown Subaru, your locally owned and operated Subaru dealer since 1981. For the third consecutive year, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has recognized every 2012 Subaru model as a top safety pick. Brown is the only dealer that gives you state inspections for life. You can test drive any all-wheel drive model at Brown Subaru on 29 North in front of Sam's Club or online at brownautos.com. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming on WNRN is also brought to you by Boudoir Lingerie Boutique in Boonesboro Shopping Center in Lynchburg. At Boudoir, you can find Bridal by Jane Woolrich, Intimate Apparel by Blush and Ooh La La Cherie, as well as maternity, lingerie, and loungewear. Boudoir carries all sizes from AA to H at 4925 Boonesboro Road, Lynchburg. Boudoir is your dressing room at VOTREBOUDOIR.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because at noon, it's Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Tamara will be here this Sunday. She'll bring you the roots of alternative, because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue, only on WNRN. Back with our guest today, Kenrick Ward. He's the chief at the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. Kenrick, we're talking about Virginia's renewable energy law and how our Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, seemingly far on the conservative side, coming together with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Many people, just because they're in an environmentalist group, would say far to the left, but how they have found, for different reasons, how this specific law is not functioning. Do you see where any changes might be made by the General Assembly during this upcoming session?
There will be proposals made. We'll see what comes out of the sausage grinder. But the Climate Action Network is going to propose legislation that would require that utilities actually build and operate solar, wind, or hydro projects within the state of Virginia, and thereby bringing jobs to Virginia, in order to qualify for these adders and bonuses that they're currently receiving. Mr. Cuccinelli has yet to commit to which plan he prefers, but he clearly also wants a reform of the system. And so I think the devil will be in the details as far as if a true alliance can be formed. But Cuccinelli has not said that he wants to scrap the entire program. He has his doubts and reservations about it, but he's not closed the door, and he has invited the Chesapeake Group as well as other interested parties to weigh in and discuss the issue.
Has this been brought up by others before? Is this just making the news because of the disparate groups who are talking about it? Because one of the things that I found most, whether to say interesting is the proper word or not, but that Dominion Power, the renewable energy projects, they were the claims that they were being able to make to receive the benefits of this law, these were all old projects. I think I read that nothing from after the year 2000 was actually a project that they were getting the positive benefits from.
That's correct. And in the case of the hydroelectric dam in West Virginia, it's 80 years old.
And it's not, that's right. It's not just outside of the state that they're receiving the benefits from. It's not even new stuff.
Right. So Dominion's argument is, well, you know, we're adding to our portfolio of energy sources. We are using and tapping into renewable energy. And most people would say that's a good and admirable goal. The concern is, what are Virginians getting out of it? Are they getting jobs out of it? The answer is no on that, clearly. Are they getting better rates? The answer on that appears to be no as well, because these utilities are collecting these multi-million dollar bonuses and adders along the way, and it's not being reflected in lower rates. So this is where you get a free market critique, which is what Cuccinelli brings to the table, along with the Chesapeake Group's critique, which is more oriented toward jobs. And that may be the common ground, is, you know, how is this affecting the economy? And is this a truly level playing field? Or is it just a system that's set up to benefit the two largest public utilities in the state? And I dealt with this issue down in Florida as well. It's common around the country where you have large investor-owned utilities such as Dominion and Appalachian who do provide power, but they're also very powerful political players. And it's the old story. You follow the money. These guys do contribute a lot of money to politicians. And so this is where if a media outlet just tries to simplify it and distill it down to Republicans versus Democrats, it defies that simplistic kind of analysis, because let's face it, politicians on both sides of the aisle rely on political donations, and both Democrats and Republicans do receive contributions, large contributions from these utilities. So then the issue really becomes, is this the way public policy should be conducted? Or is this simply a corrupt, cronyist system that utilities are exploiting and leveraging to their own advantage?
So what brought this to the attention of Watchdog.org? Is it the news piece itself, or is it the two different groups coming together on the news piece?
Well, Rick, what we did is separately and independently, Cuccinelli's office produced a report about this energy program. And they did it because this program is now 5 years old, and they thought it was an appropriate time to analyze its cost and benefits. And a lot of people may not know this, but in Virginia, the Attorney General's office is responsible for being the consumer advocate for the ratepayers in Virginia. A lot of states have a separate freestanding office as part of their Public Service Commission or Public Utilities Commission that does that job. But in Virginia, the Attorney General is charged with looking out for the taxpayers' interests, the ratepayers' interests. So he came out with a report that was very critical of this bonus program. And then separately and independently, the Chesapeake Climate Action Network came out with its report, actually predating Cuccinelli's report, where it had raised issues about the job creation issue relating to these renewables. So what we did at Watchdog, which I believe is unique to any media outlet in the state, is we looked at the two reports side by side, and we analyzed them and looked at both of their criticisms and wrote a story that pulled those elements together and tried to make sense of it. Again, not to be overly repetitive here, but I think this is the takeaway that I would like your listeners to get, which is if you have a media outlet that is simply looking at a bifurcated system of Republicans bad, Democrats good, what you get in this case would be, oh, the Chesapeake Climate Action Network really says this system is bad and ill-conceived and being manipulated by large corporate interests. And then they may ignore or downplay the Cuccinelli report because, hey, we've got our minds made up. Cuccinelli is this rabid Tea Party whack job who is just not standing up for the interests of the public. Our point is that blinds you to the bigger picture and the political realities. Let's face it, Mr. Cuccinelli does have political capital to expend, and he's chosen to expend it, in this case, on the side of the ratepayers.
Our guest today, Kenrick Ward, he's the bureau chief at Virginia's Bureau of Watchdog.org. www.watchdog.org takes you to the national level, and then /Virginia can take you to some of the more state-specific articles. But you can also click on, if I remember right, you can click on politics, and it takes you to articles that have been written with that keyword throughout the nation, but maybe state-specific, et cetera, correct?
That's correct, and we have separate blogs for each state. So there's a number of entry points that the site has, and it's helpful for people who, you know, want to get immersed in local state politics. We feel that that's our forte.
All right. Phone lines are open if you'd like to call in with a question for Kenrick or a comment on any of the specific articles, topics we'll be talking about. 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Kenrick, let's jump to another one. Something that I believe just, it was one of the more recent articles that I read, and I can't remember which ones were yours. You said there are how many folks at the Bureau?
We have two reporters up in Alexandria, and I'm based outside of Fredericksburg.
This one caught my attention because immediately, I don't know why anybody would be for this, although then I think I found somebody who made positive comments about it. Barcoded license plates here in the state being discussed as putting a barcode, something that the police officers or others involved could read not only your license plate, but who you are and what type of car you're driving, et cetera, from a barcode.
Yeah, Rick, this is right up in your wheelhouse because in addition to barcodes, they're looking at radio frequency identification tags and slapping those onto our license plates. To our knowledge, we would be the first state in the nation to do this. And the rationales behind it we explored in our story and frankly seem a little shaky. This is a classic case where if someone wants to stereotype our news organization as some sort of rabidly right-wing Republican apologetic group, you'd have to look at this story and say, no way, Jose, because...
Right, I expect to find my, is it New Hampshire with a don't tread on me?
Right.
That's who I expect to be waving the flag outside when this discussion comes before the General Assembly.
Right. You have Republicans pushing this bill on both sides of the House and Senate. So this is a Republican bill. Let's not lose sight of that fact. And we're very critical of this legislation. Now, our news story plays it straight. We do give the opportunity for VDOT and the state police to weigh in because they're among the so-called stakeholders who are putting this report together.
And what is their, you know, what do they benefit from this?
Well, the claim by the legislators is that Virginia is going more into the toll road business, as we all know, and that this is actually a way to do two things. One, to unclog traffic, unquote, which is the term that Mr. Delegate May used, and the other is simply to help law enforcement, as you noted, quickly identify license plates that may be obscured by a license plate frame or may be weathered and hard to read. So it's a help to law enforcement. Both those points may sound plausible and maybe even beneficial on some levels, but you do have to wonder, and this is the point that the Rutherford Institute and the American Civil Liberties Union, both of which we quoted in our story, again, one on the right, one on the so-called left, raise questions about from a Fourth Amendment standpoint, the whole search and seizure issue, constitutional rights. I think there is an expectation of a degree of privacy when you're driving. Now, if you choose to be on a toll road, we have a nice opt-in system called Easy Pass, and you can certainly get one of those, and you know what the consequences of that are. That Easy Pass basically does act like a identifier that can track you. But now, if they're talking about tagging every single plate in the Old Dominion, that's a whole different ball game. And it raises the question of, you know, is Big Brother in the driver's seat?
One of the interesting, I don't know, comments that I read for someone who said this was okay is that once you put your car on a public road, you are therefore allowing yourself, you give up this Privacy Act. Maybe not within the car, but certainly the exterior part of the car. So having a barcode that allows your license plate to be read more easily falls into that category.
Well, and that reader does have a good point. I mean, that's kind of the reality check here that we all need to think about, that even as we speak, police do and have the ability to scan license plates and put it into their system. We know that's going on currently. This system they're talking about with barcodes and RFID chips just makes it all the easier. And I think that's where you go from having the camel's nose under the tent to having it completely knocking the tent over, because chances are, this has not been decided, but chances are this kind of system would be so expensive that it would have to be produced and probably operated and maintained by a private company. And that's something that should be alarming to people of all political persuasions, because, again, following the money, information is power, and information can be monetized. And then you wonder, okay, you may not have a complete level and expectation of privacy on a public road, but let's say you're going to a psychiatrist's office, and is that really something people need to know about? And if you have RFID chips and barcodes that readily enable law enforcement and whoever is the keeper of this database to have that information at their disposal, you can see where that leads you down the road to a possible totalitarian system.
Are you saying that because the barcode can be read in the parking lot, it sort of it moves beyond the police officer checking you as you drive down the road, but then he or anyone with access to this could also, you know, turn to the left and scan all the vehicles into the parking lot?
Right. I mean, yeah, it opens everything up. It just becomes a massive data collection process. The example that was given by the Rutherford Institute, which is one of the objectors to this concept, they're fighting, I should say defending, a young girl at a high school in Texas who refused to wear a bracelet that had a barcode embedded into it. This high school in Texas is requiring every student to basically wear a barcode to assess the comings and goings of that student. Some people may think that sounds innocuous. It's maybe a safety device and should be used. But this particular co-ed had a religious complaint about this program. Rutherford took her case, and in the process of investigating, found out that the company that did this barcoding for this high school has made over $500,000 doing that program for just that one school. That gives you a sense of the amount of money that's in play here if we're talking about barcoding and RFID chipping every license plate in the state.
And I believe that I should find out what that business is and put my money there, because I think eventually that's where we'll be, and that sounds highly profitable. Our guest today, Kenrick Ward, Bureau Chief for the Virginia set of watchdog.org, 979-0919. If you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, 877-967-6762.
And support for WNRN today comes from the markets of Tiger Fuel Company. Homegrown since 1982, you can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
Hi, my name is Sam Bush, and I'm the curator for a Charlottesville arts venue called The Garage. For over 4 years, The Garage has hosted concerts, art openings, potlucks, film screenings, and dance parties on any given night of the week. The Garage captures Charlottesville's creative spirit as much as any venue. We've hosted groups from across the globe, including such acts as Carl Anderson and The Lumineers. About a month ago, a car accidentally drove through one of its walls, leaving a lot of damage. Thankfully, the driver was unharmed, but there's a lot of work to be done. We're looking to raise $10,000 to make some much-needed upgrades, including roofing, flooring, even sound and lights. Please consider checking out The Garage's Kickstarter page or visit us at thegarage-seville.com. I'm Sam Bush from The Garage and The Hill and Wood, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here I am with our guest today, Kenrick Ward, the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. Kenrick, one of the things that I guess it's difficult to overlook when you start talking about education, school systems in our area, within our state, I guess, you know, you can take that nationally. People, whether or not you have children in the school system, you have money invested in the school system, that's a topic that gets everyone to sit straight up and listen tightly. Article, I believe, that came out of the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org.
Yeah, about
the school staffing surge.
Right. About a month ago, this is before the tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary, we reported on the growth in Virginia of non-instructional staffers at K through 12 schools here. From 1999 to 2009, the number or the percentage of non-instructional positions grew by 100%. So it doubled. And that was five times more than the growth of student enrollment and almost 10 times the increase in teacher hiring. So needless to say, Virginia led the nation in the growth of non-instructional staffers.
Number one
in the
nation. Out of 50.
That's right.
More hirings for non-instructional.
Which is everything from cafeteria workers to bus drivers to psychologists to all the ancillary jobs that are done at schools. And it shows how school districts here and
administration
elsewhere,
too. I mean, we're talking about, we're not just talking about, you know, the bus driver, the folks who are cleaning up afterwards, it's, you know, landscape, and you're talking what I assume to be a heavy inclusion from what I read of the folks down at the main superintendent's building.
And some of those folks are getting six-figure salaries, these layering upon layering of administrative jobs. So, yeah, in terms of dollars, we're talking a significant increase in spending outside of the classroom.
Now, I know that they will always get into the teachers, but somebody had commented, I don't remember, I don't think it was in this particular article, but I think it was elsewhere, the No Child, this all goes back to President Bush and the No Child Left Behind Act, and that's why this has happened.
Definitely from a clerical standpoint, which you referenced about all the record keeping and bookkeeping and report filing that has to be done, there's definitely been a huge administrative overhead increase as a result of that and other federal initiatives. Any educator will tell you that this has become a very top-heavy kind of system. In addition to that, there are just these school districts that tend to want to be a soup-to-nuts operation. Rather than contracting out maintenance work or yard work, they feel that they want to have all these folks under their umbrella being paid out of the local school district budget. So it's a combination of things. I think I kind of just, whether it's at the local level or the national level, it's really this kind of ongoing tendency to expand. I mean, that's one of the defining features of a bureaucratic system, is to protect itself and to expand its mission and its scope.
So these numbers that you've given us, check my notes, 10 times non-instructional group increased five times what it was, but it's 10 times more than the number of teachers who were actually hired. Does this offset anything that happened before 1992? Do we have numbers that say from 1980 to 1992 the increase in instructional positions hired was way up, and this is some sort of seesaw effect? Do we know?
I don't have specific numbers, but there's a trend, and the trend is definitely in favor of more non-instructional hiring in this state. Now, there are other states where voters have approved, or legislators have approved, class size reduction systems and formulas, which by their very nature, have greatly increased the number of teachers, because you need more teachers to get that ratio. Virginia hasn't done it that way. What Virginia has done is kind of just kept things status quo. Now, the governor in his current proposal is proposing that teachers in this state get a raise for the first time in, I think, 5 years. And this is something that I think goes to the point. If school districts have, you know, X amount of money to spend, and they're spending more and more of it in percentage terms on non-instructional use, well, that explains, frankly, why the teachers aren't getting raises. And I think that's a problem. I think most people from all political persuasions would agree that that's a problem, because I think most people would agree that the fundamental core job of school districts is to teach. And yet, you now have more people working outside the classroom than working in the classroom. You have people who never have contact with children in an instructional fashion. And you have to wonder, at some point, is the system gotten out of whack?
Our guest, Kenrick Ward from Watchdog.org. You can go to Watchdog.org/Virginia and read this specific article or any of the other articles that caught your attention through the show today. Or there's something that comes out almost every 2 or 3 days, correct?
Well, we update our site every day with either blogs or tweets or Facebook postings. We also have a Facebook page. Trying to use social media, but as far as full-blown articles, we probably produce between 6 and 10 a week. So we're pretty active, try to stay on top of things. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, we don't try to be all things to all people. We try to cover stories that are of interest to taxpayers. You know, the school story we just talked about, whether you have a child in school or not, you are paying taxes for those schools. And so those kinds of things should be of interest to the public. You know, well, one thing I should mention, Rick, on this same score about education, right here in Charlottesville, you have the University of Virginia, a great public university, and there's legislation that we'll be following that would require that 65% of the money allocated to all the universities and colleges in Virginia actually be expended in the classroom. I don't know where they came up with the 65% figure, but it's clearly a response to a concern that people have about administrative hiring and salaries versus curricular hiring and salaries, and that's something that will be addressed, I think, at this coming session.
Well, not to jump too far off topic, but we know that's not a lot of money anymore, because I think the state gives 5% or some. It's dropped to an awfully low percentage of the overall budget that now comes from the state for these public universities.
That would apply to tuition as well. So other funding sources would also have that same cap applied.
Let me jump back to the we were talking about the Virginia school staffing surge. I mentioned going to the website to read the entire article for this issue or for any of the others. Again, it's watchdog.org/Virginia. And I'm pretty sure I picked this quote out of the article. I'm not sure whether it came from Governor McDonnell or from someone else. Virginia appears to have gone to a strategy of paying teachers well and having fewer of them. That sort of being the excuse, that's a poorly biased word, but that being the reason as to why there are fewer teachers being hired than non-instructional is, we don't need as many because we have better teachers and we're paying them well. But actually, we know that Virginia is very ranked in the very middle of the national 50 in terms of expenditures for teachers. And as you said, they haven't had a raise for 5 years. So can you talk about whether or not you know who made that, said that, and then why that may be accurate or may not?
That was Benjamin Scafidi, who was the author of the 50 state report that listed Virginia as numero uno in this spending derby. And I had to question that statement as well, Rick, that to blanketly say that Virginia teachers are well paid and that that's the strategy does sort of fly in the face of the facts, because as we noted, Virginia teachers have not received an actual pay raise in 5 years, and they're looking at maybe getting a 2% raise this coming year. I will tell you, having come from Florida, teachers do get paid more here, but that may not be a very good comparison. So I think that you know, my sense of having covered education for several years is that, unfortunately, it's sort of like journalists. Teachers are kind of at the bottom rung of the pay scales, and administrators, the gap between administrative salaries and teaching salaries has really become quite a chasm, and it's unfortunate, because what that leads to is teachers who want to make more money end up going into the administrative ranks just to do that. And just because you're a good teacher doesn't necessarily mean you're a good administrator. Just like just because you're a good reporter doesn't necessarily make you a good editor.
The old Peter principle.
That's right, exactly. So I'm glad to see that there's a proposal being discussed to at least throw a little more money toward teachers. What I would be careful of is across the board blanket policies that would say, well, every teacher is a good teacher, and therefore every teacher deserves more money, and every teacher should get the same kind of raise. That kind of mentality I don't think would be well served.
But we do know that it's difficult to identify, that many people would say that it is very difficult to identify who's a good teacher based on the variety of ways that are currently proposed, depending on the school system that you're in, the number of students in your classroom, the social backgrounds that your students come from, et cetera. So using these non-scientific, I don't know if that's the right word, phrase or not, ways to identify a good teacher may in itself not be fair.
It's a very complex process. I mean, the, every human dynamic you just alluded to is in play. There's a lot of moving parts. My wife teaches special education, for instance. And, yeah, how are you going to set up a system that would measure a student's performance on a standardized test?
And if I remember that article correctly, they talked about increasing the the teachers, about how the teachers, number of teachers hired had not been done fairly or whatever in compared to the non-instructional, but they were talking about reducing the number of teachers actually in that category, correct?
Which, yeah, that's a little hard to believe that they could do that. And enrollment is up by about 10-11%. So you do.
Hang on, caller.
You do need to have, teachers to work those classrooms. But I think, we're fairly early on in the whole education reform process. We know in our business, in every business, people are paid to some extent based on their abilities. And so the art of the deal is to find out how can we be fair to teachers and reward teachers who are, in fact, excellent teachers. You know, a second grader can tell you that difference.
Let's see. We got a call from Ted in Charlottesville who actually has a question about teacher salaries. Go ahead, Ted. Sorry, Ted. I can't. Ted, you're not coming through again. We got the same phone problem that we had last week. I apologize. I'm going to put you back on hold and let the girls take your question by phone. Hang on. And we thought we'd solve that, but I guess our I need to contact the engineer once again. All right, so Kenrick Ward here from the Virginia Bureau of Watchdog.org. I want to make sure we get to another topic or two, one of the other articles, but I'll give us a chance to stick with this one so Ted can get his question in. What have you found to be the topic where you get the most feedback from your readers?
I would say it's when we come across issues of government overreach or government overspending, wasteful spending. The license plate story did get a lot of response. because it was considered a government overreach, an abuse, a potential abuse. That's definitely a hot button issue for people, and we appreciate that because that does transcend the partisan labels. It really gets to the core of the issue of how government is serving or misserving the public. Another story we got a lot of response on was the military voting issue and how ballots were being delayed in getting to military personnel. A lot of concern was raised by readers in that regard. Again, that should be a nonpartisan issue. People who fight for this country should have every opportunity, and it turned out that the number of absentee ballots requested and sent had dropped some 92% in this state since the previous election, and there were other huge multi-digit drops elsewhere. And so we got a lot of comments and feedback on that story as well.
All right. Ladies, you have Ted's question coming through because I want to move on to another topic real quick. All right. We'll come back to Ted's question. Kenrick, I want to talk for a minute about, I had Delegate David Toscano on the program here back in March, and based on some information that others had given me, matches up with this. There's a bill being put forward about how welfare recipients should not be able to spend their monies on alcohol, cigarettes, or strip clubs, which caught my eye. Talk about this for a minute.
One of my fellow writers has been covering that one, and that is a good issue that gets a lot of response. Again, the technology sort of blows up on our face. Using these debit cards has kind of opened the way for people to have more flexibility in how they're spending their money, and it's my understanding that the state is going to find a way, they say, to crack down on something that people never should have expected to have happened to begin with. It's one of those stories where good intentions of helping indigent people, runs smack into human nature and a desire to game the system or do things that are not necessarily in the best interests of a family.
Well, the reason I bring up Delegate Toscano was this, to me, the welfare recipients ties into the SNAP, and I forget what it officially stands for, but it's Nutritional Assistance.
Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program.
Right. So they're food stamps. That's the modern phrase for
right.
Food stamp.
Correct.
And I had been, I have a friend who works for a business, and one of her responsibilities is to make sure that the food stamps, run through the process so that the company can be repaid for this. And she informed me that food stamps, I don't think you can use them for, you can't use them to buy alcohol or cigarettes. You can use them to buy sodas and potato chips and ice cream. And Delegate Toscano seemed to be caught off guard by that. He said he didn't think it was correct, and I'm paraphrasing here, but wasn't sure, but didn't know that and wasn't sure of the next step to take.
That's a real tough one because where do you draw the line? Can government really dictate every choice out there? It's sort of one of those unintended consequences. The other thing that happens, Rick, is that there's a whole secondary market for this kind of stuff. These vouchers or debit cards can be sold on the black market, as it were, and for maybe a dimes on the dollar. But if someone really wants to buy alcohol, they trade in their card and get cash money.
All right, Kenrick Ward, our guest today on the Wake Up Call.
Today's programming is supported by the law firm of Goodman, Allen, and Folletti. With offices in Charlottesville and throughout Virginia, Goodman, Allen, and Folletti is dedicated to meeting the complex legal needs of healthcare providers, small businesses, and individuals. Goodman, Allen, and Folletti. The power to represent, the people to make it happen. Online at goodmanallen.com.
All right, 11:55 on the Wake Up Call. A few minutes left with our guest, Kenrick Ward from watchdog.org. Kenrick, here's the question that came through from Ted here in Charlottesville. He says that though the teacher's pay scale seems to be unchanging, aren't individual teacher salaries still increasing?
they increase up to a point based on years of service. So if you haven't reached the maximum yet, each year that you are in the system, you will get a bump. Not a big one, but there is a ladder that you're on. So Ted's absolutely correct in that regard. But Virginia has a lot of veteran teachers who basically are good at what they do, and they're maxed out. They have no prospect for an increase because they're at the top of the ladder. And it's kind of a catch-22. It's not unique to this state, but that is the situation.
All right, just a few minutes left. Let me jump onto this because in Virginia, as almost everyone knows, the governor can only do one term. Constitutionally, one term, and then must take off. Could come back for a second term, but someone must be in between. No two terms in a row. Some have said that that is why Governor McDonnell is doing something that many would consider very non-Republican, proposing such things as various taxes, an increase in the gasoline tax, extended lengths, tolls on I-95, more spending, higher taxes from a GOP governor. Can you talk about that? I realize we only have a few moments left.
Yeah, I'm pretty agnostic on that question of consecutive terms. You might be able to make the case that that liberates him to do these kinds of things. Frankly, though, my understanding is if you look at the full body of work by Mr. McDonnell, he hasn't exactly been anti-tax. He's been very pro-fee. This state does have a lot of expenses attached to it that you pay in terms of vehicle inspections, for instance. And the other thing that I was amazed to learn about is that if you make $17,000 in this state, you are at the top of the tax bracket. That's amazing to me, why someone at that level of earning should be paying out 5.25% on state income tax. The governor hasn't promised to address that one, and I wish he would.
And do you think, I mean, what's the General Assembly going to do? Because we certainly have a budget deficit, and, you know, tax it. You can go back to the fiscal cliff issue, and you can talk about whether or not there's what's the term they use? Increased revenue versus decreased spending. What do you think is going to happen in the General Assembly?
Well, the House, I think, is disposed to spend less. The House, I think, generally is to the right of Mr. McDonnell on fiscal issues. But the Senate, tied up at 2020, is an effective block on that. So I don't see big changes on either side. I see a lot of kind of mini gridlock, a miniature version, if you will, of what we see in Washington, D.C. I think maybe we'll have a little clearer picture about what the Virginians at large want once we get past the November elections and see what happens in those two chambers. But this is a short legislative session, and I don't see a lot of big changes ahead.
All right, our guest today, Kenrick Ward. Thank you so much for driving down from Locust Grove.
My pleasure, Rick.
And I hope you'll come on again in the future.
But now that I know my way.
Always a good thing. I prefer the guest to actually be in the studio and not participating by phone in the car. Up next is Tamara Winograd with Les Temps Perdue. We'll see you again next Sunday on the Wake Up Call.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.
Les Temps Perdue.